Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunatu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navaditamastu Shavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, so, Table of Contents, Chapter 3, Pure Devotional Service, The Change in Heart, Chapter 4, The Process of Creation, Chapter 5, The Cause of All Causes, and Chapter 6, The Purusha Shukta, Confirmed. Okay, so here we're going through all the elements of the primary creation, how the Lord is behind everything, because this is the most important actual element of creation. Mm. If that's appreciated, then you can deal with, without getting distracted, the secondary creation. Right, because the problem is it's the secondary creation is where we get distracted. We become enamored by the modes or the methods, everything of using the secondary creation as opposed to its actual purpose. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, people get into a thing, about cars, right? The decals, the wheels, the flaring, the little spoilers on the back. They can never go more than, 60 kilometers an hour. But, it's set up as if it could do 300. But so this is bewildered by the facility. You know what I'm saying? Everybody gets into their paraphernalia, whatever it is. You're into skateboards, it's the whole thing. You're into other sports, you're into that. Does that make sense? You're into reading, then you have this whole thing with the libraries and the classics here and this there. And so whatever the area, people have a tendency to get enamored by the facility of what they're trying to do. Right? You read because of knowledge. Right, so it's not about that the books are all leather bound and hand printed or these kind of things. It's about the knowledge gained. The cooking, it's about the quality of the food, not the pots themselves. You know what I'm saying? They're useful. They're good. It's important to have good material, but the tendency is we get so attracted by the material, even sometimes more than the results we get from them. Yes. Because the real point of things means that it has to be the Lord. And that's why we're here, because we're trying to deal with the Lord's. In other words, you have the spiritual realm and the facilities. And then, so you can interact with the Lord based on that, or you can try to enjoy the facilities separately. But because we technically can enjoy them separately, therefore you have to basically appreciate the facilities. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it works. So the mundane, the focus is on the facilities. So in other words, it's on the you could say the sambandha aspect, but that's controlled in the material world by ignorance. Right? The sandini potency is the focus, but that sandini potency transforms into the material mode of ignorance here. That's existence. And that existence in the material world is the mode of ignorance. Right? While in the spiritual world, it's eternity. Does that make sense? There's that transfer. But in the spiritual world, the focus is on prema, or the hladini. That love for Krishna. It's not about the facility. It means in Vaikuntha, there's a touch of the aspect of the facility is great, but that's because it's God's, right? Naturally, God has great facility. You'd expect that.
Yes.
Right?
Everybody's talking about
mm-hmm.
in the very first.
No. They're round. They're round and they stick out.
Like that.
But there's two kinds. One that, I think it's the yellow ones that they come off. Yellow and black. The black, mainly black ones, they don't. Unless it's black and orange, red. I can't remember, it's been so long. We don't have the trees that make them so much. The Ghiblis is where they grow. They love Ghiblis. Sometimes Kadambas, but mostly Ghiblis. Yeah, but well, there's two. One of them that if you touch them, you get stuck, and the other ones, you can they don't come out. They look the same except for the color. Yes.
Wouldn't we say that material cryogenous mode of ignorance, false ego?
No, false ego's in Samanda. Because that's your identity. I am the material energy. Mm-hmm. Right? Cryogen is the mind. You know, it's like, that's the mind. Abhideya is the intelligence.
Yeah.
Right? You understand? So goodness is cryogena. Remote of passion is in the Abhideya, the intelligence, and then the ego, because that's your identity, your whole identity. Because in the spiritual world, I'm servant of Krishna. And the transcendental platform is the platform we function from. That's just the basic platform. But that's not where the interest lies. The interest is not focusing on that. Mm-hmm. It's about, okay, what facilities do we have to deal with? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the whole. Okay. Yes.
So then Vladini turns into passion?
No, goodness.
Goodness.
Yeah. That's because that's the mind. The mind is what experiences things. Remember when Maharaj used to come across the bridge with his shoes? He'd be running and clunk, 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 clunk. They could tell he was coming, right? Okay. Is that so that there's that reflection? So Sambit, Sanini, Vladini, that's how the spiritual world is controlled. But when you get to the spiritual world, no one makes the distinction. No one goes, okay, this devotee is, you know, this Shakti, that devotee is that Shakti, this one's this. You don't worry about that there. It's just all the pastimes go on. We only make the distinction here because we tend to not make any distinction at all. So when we start to make distinction, we can tell the difference between matter and spirit. And the inferiority of it. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. So that's the whole point. Then we can see what's going on. We can see what's happening. Right. So the activity in the spiritual world is done to please Krishna. The activity here we do to please ourselves. Right? Means the activity there is when Krishna's happy, we're happy. The activity here is when I remove the difficulty, anxiety I'm feeling, then I become happy. Right? Mm. You know, so and there it's that I'm servant of Krishna, here it's that I'm matter. Mm. You understand? So that's why their reflection. They look similar. Mm. But just like the body is there, it's real, it can do so many things, and what you see in the mirror appears to be real. But you can't get anything from it. The example of the tree on the bank is the tree in the water looks the same, but you can do nothing with the fruits, the flowers, the leaves, the bark. You know, no medicinal purposes, nothing else. You know, you can't even actually get them. You go to pick them, you'll get nothing. That's how the material world works, because it looks like it. So that's why we think we will be happy here, because technically we still think we're in the spiritual world. Right, because we think everything's eternal and everything's full of happiness. That's the spiritual world, not here. Right? That's the difference. So the main thing is that if you correct the sambandha and the cryogena, right, your abhideya will follow. Right, because thinking and feeling is first, then willing the activity. So if I'm servant of Krishna and I'm trying to please Krishna, you know, through prema, then your activities will be devotional service. If I am this body and I'm trying to please this body, then your activities will be mundane. Does that make sense? That's why many times in the conversation we only discuss two points. Mm. You know, desire and need, or identity and need. You know, or envy and attachment. Because the other just naturally follows. If there's envy and attachment, your activities are material. Yes. Right? If there's pure servant of God and love of God, your activities will be devotional. Does that make sense? So these were getting in all this basis for this, so we see the origin in the Lord, how it's all coming from Him by His will. He glances at Pradhan, you get the Mahatattva. You know what I mean? You get Mahat, right? That it all separates into the energies, and that creates all the, does all the primary creation. Right? So just His glance makes that all happen. Yes.
So we're Satchit Ananda.
Yes.
So can we say that when we remove material difficulty, that Ananda can shine through for a moment and it actually is happiness we're experiencing?
Or we're in what scenario?
If you have a material situation, something's in the way, remove that, and then for a moment it's
happening. Yeah, basically. Yeah. It means what people are doing in the material world, if you understand what you're dealing with, you get symptoms of the soul. Because there's activity, there's consciousness, there's activity, there's identity, there's a desire for happiness. You know, there's a desire for eternal happiness. You know, relationships, everything's based on relationships, but in the material world, people don't actually know how to operate relationships. You know what I'm saying? So it's a relationship, but it's still just, it's one of your paraphernalia. I got relationships, you know, like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just it becomes part of the identity.
Yeah.
You know, oh, he's the nice guy everyone likes. You know, oh, he's the guy you stay away from that guy, right? You know, so it's, you know, standards, you know, or he's got this, he's got that, he's the guy with money, or he's the guy with the cars, or, you know, he's the guy that's crazy and wild because he just does anything. You know, so you get these identities that are about what you have or what you deal with. But no one says, you know, he's the guy that's, you know, always happy. We say he's successful, right? A man is successful. That's in the material world, looking for success. People want to be successful. Successful means you have facility.
Yes.
Successful doesn't mean you're happy.
No.
Yeah. Right? That's the thing. We take it that the two should go together. But the point is if your success is mundane, then your happiness is also going to be mundane, which means it doesn't exist. Right? Because as soon as you see, if something remains in its position, it can. Right? But here, due to the temporary nature, when it moves from Prayojana back to Sambandha, right? Or from Aniruddha to Pajumna, then the experience is lost. It's only there for a moment. So now it's only facility. On the spiritual world, even though it shifts, the experience is eternal. So now, not only do you get that eternal experience from the first time it's used, but now as part of the field, it expands the field, so now you can do more and get more out of it. That's the thing, is it never goes away. You never lose energy. Here it's not lost to the material energy, but it's lost to you. But there, energy, because energy is never lost, there it's not lost to you. That's the difference. So it's very different. So these chapters, they point this out, because this is where our difficulties lie, is we're really thinking that the material world is eternal and full of bliss, when it's temporary and full of non-bliss. Not so bliss. Yeah. Yeah. So, temporary. Temporary insecure. You know, temporary. Yeah, I say. Yeah. Yeah. Temporary. Hard work, and not so blissful.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
You want to buy in?
No.
Insecure.
Yeah.
You know how you say, foaming at the mouth and.
only being happy for a moment.
Yeah.
No?
No.
Envy and attachment. No?
No.
Okay.
When you put it like that.
Yeah. That's when the Bhagavad Gita does it. Because otherwise you think, yeah, you know, like that. No, it's just... What was that one Prabhupada used that was really good? Prabhupada pointed out this morning that it was dealing with the Satchit and Ananda. Peace, happiness, and knowledge. That was the thing. Yeah, I couldn't get the last. Peace, happiness, and knowledge. Because that's the Sat is peace, Chit is knowledge, and Ananda is happiness. Everybody wants that.
Everybody.
But, you know, they don't understand where that's coming from. It's coming because of the nature of the soul. So therefore, you have to get it on the platform of the soul. Mm. You know?
Yes. On this topic, it's just a question of material means wanting to have facility and spiritual to have relationship.
Basically, yeah. Means you see even in the material world, those who lean more on relationships are considered higher.
Yes.
But ultimately, it's still part of their identity. You know, they're the nice guy. They're the ones that are pleasant with everybody. But if you're really being realistic, you'd be nice with those you could be, and those who aren't, you would avoid. Right? So that's the difficulty. Is the nice guy interacts nice, but he also gets bad association. Or the guy who doesn't interact with anybody avoids bad association, but he doesn't get good. You know, so it's because you're dealing with living entities in God's creation, there's always something useful in what you're dealing with. But the usefulness is not what it appears to be. Its usefulness is actually because of its higher position in connection with the Lord. But because we try to put the qualities on a material energy, like, you know, you take these rocks, you know, and so therefore I'm trying to say that they're equal. You know, we should have equal opportunity for the rocks, you know. Why this guy gets to sit on the top of the page and the other's on the bottom of the page? Isn't this exploitation? You like that, you know. So then, okay, we'll work it out. This one stays on the top of the page. When we turn the page, then the next one gets to be on the top of the page. You know, then it's equal. Now, if we made a whole presentation and a whole thing, you know, brought it out on the news, you know, on talk shows, you know, Oprah is talking about it and... You know, and not that, you know, about these equality for rocks. Now, how seriously would people take it? Not so. I mean, you know, a few people get it. It'd be funny, you know. But then, the point is, but that's all we're doing. We're saying equality for dead matter. You know, liberty for dead matter. You know, fraternity of dead matter.
Your matter matters.
Yeah, your matter matters. Yes.
My matter matters more.
Yeah. Seems to have some problem here. He's on the top. The other one has to go down, or the other one, he's got to go down. See? They do have problems.
We spoil them with the equality.
Yeah, now they're fighting over it, right? I'm on top first.
Fraternity.
Hmm?
Fraternity.
Yeah. Yeah, the other rocks just don't care. Okay. Is this, you know, so, because otherwise, something is like we said in the beginning, why so technical? We're talking about Shuddha Bhakti. But the point is pure devotion means it's conscious, it's favorable to Krishna, conscious of Krishna, favorable to Krishna, and free from karma and jnana. So we have to discern all those aspects. So if it's not about Krishna, why not? What makes it not? What it is we're dealing with that we can get distracted so much. So that's what then all this talks about is. So here, now we've talked about how the yogis come up and everything. You know, the materialists, then the yogis, then the higher element of yogis, then the bhaktas. So now chapter 3, pure devotional service, the change in heart. Pratigya. Everyone must take up the methods of bhakti yoga, the supreme means of self-realization. Right? Because before his question was, what is the important thing for everybody, and especially at the time of death? So here it is. Everybody should take up bhakti yoga.
The Pratigya, solemn statement of purpose of this chapter entitled Pure Devotional Service, the Change of Heart, is directly given by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to verse 10. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus, being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Why did it mention both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, and emphatically that Bhakti, the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the demigods? You catch the connection there? Means what is the formula means used there? So you have the Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and Upasana Kanda. Right? Because Upasana means worship, through worship. Upasana can mean worship of demigods. So for the smart as it is, for us, Upasana means worship of Vishnu. So then technically, though it's a part of the Upasana Kanda, technically it's Pancharatra. Because Pancharatra is Ekayana, it's only about Vishnu. While the other Upasana would be about all the demigods. That's why the previous chapter about the Vedavadaratas. Right? They think it's... They'll feel they're on the top because Upasana Kanda is considered the highest. But they'll take that. We're worshipping on the demigods. What's all this, you know, just stuff about Vishnu? You know, he's just one of 33 million. Why him? You know, at the same time, why Shiva? Why Indra? You know, because they don't pick, you know, like... The guy in charge of, you know, the those extra hairs in the back of your neck that you can never shave properly. You know, somebody's in charge of those, right?
I have to speak with that guy.
Yeah, no one takes him, you know, or the nostril hair, you know, demigod, or, you know, no. You know, Indra, you know, yeah. Shiva, Durga, the sun, you know, they don't generally wander much outside of
Ganesh.
The main personality. Yes.
In Bhagavad Sandhava, Jiva Goswami specifically says that these three divisions of Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda are specifically divisions of the Brahmana Shastras.
Yes.
Of the Vedas.
Oh, the Brahmanas themselves.
The Brahmanas, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because that's where worship is applied. Yeah, okay. That's very nice. That's very nice. Yeah, because Samhita is just verses. Yeah. And Aranyakas and Upanishads would only worry about transcendence or the metaphysics of what's there. Yeah. Very nice. Thank you. Yes.
So all these three were in the Brahmanas?
What he's saying is the Brahmanas describe these three. So when you say the Vedas describe Karma Kanda Jnana, he's saying in specifics, then within the Veda, because all four sections are considered the Veda, but it's within the Brahmanas, because there you're applying the verses for getting some variety of results. So, therefore, you can apply the verses for karma, for jnana, or for upasana. Yeah. Okay. Bhakti Yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. It means even you have that, you have to take it up. Sometimes devotees say, oh, I'm so fallen, I'm so this, that, I can't do devotional service. No, the point is even you want everything, still devotional service you have to follow. Because it's the only thing, one, that will purify you and get you to give those things up. And at the same time, it's the only thing that will actually get you those material things. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Unless you know you're extremely pious, you know. No, you know if your last name's Rothschild, then you can have consider. Okay, there's some piety here, you know. But if it's not, then you know you might consider Bhakti Yoga for speeding things up.
Okay.
Right?
I'm convinced.
Okay. Chapter 3 summarizes questions and answers. But if you do nothing, you're not going to get anything. So saying, "Oh, I can't, I'm not unqualified devotional service," that may be true, but doing nothing is still not going to make one qualified. It's by engaging in devotional service, because it's separate from the material, one will become qualified. Right? Question 29 is implied by Sukadev between verse 1 and 2, right? It's in between.
Between the lines.
Yeah.
Even though this question is not directly stated in the text of Bhagavatam, it appears in the study guide to help the student understand why Sukadeva Goswami suddenly speaks on the materialistic demigod worship. In verses 2 to 7, after discussing self-realization and God-realization in the previous two chapters. So that's why the acharyas, they point these things out. You notice that Vishwanath especially, he's very expert at showing what's in between the two verses. Because a statement is made, and then a question is asked, or one statement is made, and then a seemingly very different direction. That's because in between those two, if you contemplate, you'll get this. But because we're known by the, you know, nomenclatures, you know, variety of nomenclatures of Manda, Sumanda, Matayo, Manda, Bhagya, like this, you know, it's just, so therefore the acharyas, for our benefit, pointed out.
Yeah.
Okay. After discussing self-realization, God-realization in the previous two chapters, it's already, so why go back? You know, just like before, they were going along the discussion and suddenly it goes some other direction. Yes. And then after so many chapters, then it comes back to the same story. Right? Because there's side points to be understood in that. It'll give further understanding and depth. That's why the Puranas, that's the excellence of the Puranas, but that's also why when people are into categorizing things too much, they don't understand them. You know, why did this come in now? Oh, we'd be better somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So you end up doing that, you know, like they did with the Astadhyaya. What is it? That's the original. Then what is the Siddhanta Kaumudi? They took and rearranged it into a more logical thing. That yes, if you already know Sanskrit and you look at it, Siddhanta Kaumudi is a very good way to place it because you know everything. But if you're learning it, then the Astadhyaya, the original, is actually the way to learn. Right? Does that make sense? It's a problem that comes up in education. It's very common. Someone who's very learned in the field tries to present it from their position. And then the audience doesn't understand it. You know, that's the problem, at least in modern education, of how to learn English. Because they've come up with these systems from the PhD level that, you know, a five-year-old can't relate to. And the PhD can't relate to how a five-year-old actually learns. You know, so that's why for the last 200 years there's been an inefficiency in learning to read.
Yes.
Like that. It's just, that's how it comes up. Like that. Question 29. After hearing about the process of transcendental realization that Sukadeva Goswami explains to Maharaj Parikit, what if the listener replies that his heart is host to other desires? Should he remain on the path of spiritual attainment, right? Because, like we said, devotees sometimes, oh, I'm unqualified for this. I'm worshiping the deities, I'm unqualified. Or I'm chanting the kirtan, but I'm thinking of this and that, I'm unqualified. Or, you know, anything. I'm preaching, but I have so many desires myself, I'm unqualified. The mind can be tricky like that. Should he still worship and fix his mind only on Krishna? And for achieving material benefits, may he worship demigods? Question 30 is asked by Shonaka of Sutta. Question 30. Why did Maharaj Parikit again inquire from Sukadeva Goswami after hearing all that he had said? Right, so that's your question. But question 29 is inferred. Otherwise, why would question 30 come up? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the... Sukadeva Goswami answers this question in the next chapter. Adhyaya Prakashita. Good note on this terminology.
Yes.
Okay. The Adhyaya Prakashika for this chapter is rather longer than usual for the study guide, due to the importance of the material under examination here. It is less a chapter at a glance than an x-ray of the logical skeletal structure of the chapter. Okay? Because generally, just at a glance is the whole structure. But this one is so developed that it will be a tad bit longer. Okay? And then we get into the whole thing. Right? So that's the how you say? What I've seen is the uniqueness of the Bhagavatam as a scripture. Because other literatures, how they're formulated, every chapter is basically the same kind of structure. Mm. Like going through Arthashastra, it's got, how many books is it? 15 books. And in each book, then there's so many chapters. Mm-hmm. You know, so you end up with a lot of chapters and everything. But each kind of way, how it's set up, everything's exactly the same, very consistent like that. Mm. But in the Bhagavatam, because you're dealing with everything, then one it's very, very simple, another one will be very, very elaborate. You know, so that's why you'll see as we go through, is though the main structure is the same, the details of how that comes out is sometimes very different.
You see it also in the verses that have very, very different meters.
There's 500 varied meters. Like most scriptures, like Gita, I think it has two.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. In the third chapter, it's explained that the results of worshipping devatas are insignificant, and that senses are useless without being employed in service to the Lord. So that's what you'll see why we're going back. Because you should know what you're dealing with and why it's useless. Right?
Yes.
Like it's just like you could say, okay, this medicine is for, like the other day, someone recommended to, you know, a medicine for somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be good for one simple thing. And then looking it up on the internet, the thing literally had 3 pages of side effects.
Yeah.
I mean, serious, not just the normal things. I mean, like really, you know, around the bend side effects.
Yeah, and sometimes they're going in opposite directions, like excessive sleep and sleep deprivation.
Yeah,
And overeating and loss of appetite. And
yeah, like, so you don't even have to take heroin and cocaine at the same time. This does it for you, right? You know, it's like,
I'm good
for that. Yeah. So that's the...
That's really...
Why Shukadeva Goswami didn't touch on devotees in the previous chapter?
Because already when you're talking about the universal form. Because... is that worship of the devatas is technically, you could say, because you could use it in either karma or jnana. Mm-hmm. The karmis worship demigods, the jnanis also worship demigods. Like, generally, like if you go to Kumbh Mela, the big swamis, the big ashrams you go, they have big worship, even bigger than some of the others. You know, because they're renounced and detached and the focus is much narrower, their worship is very big. You know, some of the biggest deities, biggest facilities are all actually being done by the nuncius, you know, like that. So the demigod worship can fall into both categories. Like when we talk about smartas, that the common point is that the form of the Lord is considered to be temporary. Like the demigods are temporary, that they know. But they also take it that Vishnu, his form is temporary. So it doesn't matter whether they're karmakandis or jnanakandis, the smartest will look at it that way. That's what puts them in that category. Right? It's about the rules. So it's like yoga. You can say karma and jnana and not say yoga. And it's already covered in karma. It's considered a part of karma. So generally, upasana will be karma, though there's a small amount used in jnana. Right?
Okay. That's it.
Okay. Having answered King Parikshit's questions 26 and 27 about the duty of a sober person. Oh, does that make sense? So you started into them, and then the yogi who's applying, because yoga means connecting to the Lord. So that's the main thing. We're talking about universal form. So from universal form, you're trying to get, well, how does that connect to our position? So we're trying to bridge to the spiritual from a mundane position. So what you're changing is the situation you're in, that you're seeing it in a material way, now you can see it connected to the Lord in a spiritual way. But still it's about the situation, not about the relationship with the Lord. So then you transfer it from seeing the situation connected to the Lord, but it's still about the situation, to who controls the situation, right, is Paramatma, to, you know, who is by his will the situation has come up. So that means the will is actually higher. So the Bhagavan is the highest position. So we've already gone through that and taken it up to there and complete. So just through dealing with the one, you've already taken it all the way through and come to the perfectional stage. Because at any point, you can take it through to the Lord. But then the question comes up, okay, we've dealt with the karma and jnana, but what about upasana? Right, so now again he goes back, catches that, but now because you have the other, he doesn't have to go through it as methodically. Right? Or in doing that, you can bring out other things because you've already heard, so you can take it to a higher step. In other words, you don't have to discuss it at the same level in the previous chapters. Is that okay? You know, that's why it's recommended there is the how you say, the seriatim study, right? Because you'll go through just, you know, verse by verse. And you go through the conversation as it unfolds, which makes it easy to understand. But then there's all these points that are the same topic, just at different levels. Therefore, you go back through and the elucidatory study, because that will bring all of them together. All the points that are there about this. So then in the elucidatory, you would take karma, gyan, and upasana and put them all together. And then show how bhakti is the thing, but because you already understand how the process works. So you can only do that once you've done the seriatim.
Oh, it's like Bhagavatam Rita?
Yes.
Because
when you establish Bhagavatam, and then... Yes, so the Bhagavatam, we're hearing the conversation, but these things will come up all over the place. So you'll see Lila Avatar, then you'll see Manvantar, then this and that. You may not put it all together. So in the Lago Bhagavatam Rita, Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, they put them together. So that's your elucidatory study. Mm-hmm. Well, the Bhagavatam, the Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's the Siriyata. Mm-hmm. Like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Some dharmas are thematic?
It means each course has its, just like, means the first year is the seriatim, the second year is the elucidatory, but that's what's given by Prabhupada himself. And then the third year is elucidatory. Right? Then in this, then from the fourth year, then you start the parallel courses. So Prabhupada's books are the seriatim, and then the Acharya's works, that's the elucidatory. And you notice it as you go, when we're going through Bhagavatam, that it goes out to all these, what the Acharyas give. Yeah. So that's, I say, Prabhupada's already brought it in, but it's expected that both will be done. Prabhupada mentions that's actually a complete study. When you've gone through it, you know, from beginning to end, and you've gone back and studied it, right? You know, by putting the points together in that. Does that make sense? So it's a different way of viewing. It's quite, and then those elements of elucidatory, they also have a logical order. That's what makes a difference. We talk logic, but we don't actually necessarily think logic, because the mind doesn't do logic. The intelligence does logic. So unless we're trained in logic, we don't think like that. You know, and very few disciplines actually train you in logic these days. You know? I mean, basically only law does, that I know of in the modern context. You just have to. But even that, they put a lot of emphasis on rhetoric, so it's not purely logic, right? You know, you basically use the logic to defeat the other person as opposed to establish Siddhanta, you know. So, but it's known. But the others, it's all about, you know, the mind being free and stuff like that. So it's not a... Okay. Having answered King Purika's question, okay, duty of a sober man, facing the end of his life, Sukadeva Goswami seems to turn back the clock by speaking of sensual peekable karmis whose hearts are set on enjoying a long life to the fullest. He says that the Veda directs them to worship numerous lesser deities like demigods, demons, and sages. To those who are akama, free of material desires, the scriptures send a different message. You kindly worship the Purusham Param only. But Sri Sukadeva would have us know that this two-tiered understanding lives only within undeveloped minds. His use of the phrase udara dhi with broader intelligence indicates persons educated in Vedic thought speak in action. The lights of broader intelligence reveal the message of the Veda to be one for all. Human beings are urgently called to take up bhakti yoga with great force, tivrena, no matter if they are karmis, akarmis, or mokshakamis. Footnote 2. Right? Is that what he says? Is that if, whatever you want, it's the only method. So we're talking about you want to be successful. The only method is devotional service. And so if you want to emphasize the material benefits, right, then you have to use the understanding of how the universal form and how everything connects to the Lord for reaping benefits through artha. If you want to get rid of material pains, then you have to deal with it in connection with moksha. If you want to create a structured social system where everybody cooperates together, then it's dharma, you know, as I was saying. Or you want to just have a good time, then karma. But the point is you have to look through these, but that has to be connected to the Lord. Because all these are just how you're looking at the Lord without you're looking at the facilities, the mechanics, the results, but not necessarily the connection to the Lord. Right? So that science is there. And because action is there, there must be methods of action. So this is what Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha describe. But when they're not seen in connection with the Lord, they're called Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. When they're seen in connection with the Lord, they're called Bhakti.
Yes. And they're all going on.
Yeah, so it's all going on. Means you perform devotional service, you're becoming liberated, you're doing what you're supposed to. It's giving benefit and the senses are being engaged.
Yeah.
It's all happening. Mm-hmm. But we don't separate it off as something separate. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's the same.
Yes.
So, yes. Can we say that this third chapter is like more about relationship, can be with God or demigod?
Means the materialist will make it with the demigod, but it's only a temporary. But even if he, as his deity, chooses Vishnu, because you can follow Upasana Khanda, worship Vishnu for mundane purpose.
Yes.
You know, like we're saying, the smartest do. But for the devotees, they worship the Lord to please the Lord, though there may be also on the side mundane purpose. So in other words, the betterment of your devotional service, the betterment in seeing things in connection with the Lord is actually how one's going to be successful. Just generally, the devotees don't emphasize that aspect so much. It's there, but it's not emphasized. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, people are in the house and moving around and interacting and everything, but if you want, you know, a glass of cold water, you go to the fridge. But it's not that everybody sits around talking about the fridge. You know? So that's the whole thing, is the materialist talks about the fridge.
Yes.
You know, people, it's not something wrong, they interact with who's there. You know, so that's the difficulty.
Does that make sense? I saw a documentary on one guy, he got a new kitchen for like $15,000, and then the final cut was him making a frozen pizza in his new kitchen.
Yes. Yeah. Funny. Okay, so footnote 2, right? That's what we're on. This is in keeping with the verse of high regard from earlier in the first canto. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Sruti, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.12. And notice it says that absolute truth, not this absolute truth, because right? This is here, that is there. Because this, is, if you're doing in Upanishadic, it'll always be this, that. If you're doing in poetic, like Puranic, then you don't necessarily have to use that. Then you're talking about, you know, this person here, you know, he is the Supreme Lord, but at the same time he's driving Arjuna's chariot, as Bhishmadeva's talking. Then it's in a poetic, but when you're talking about differentiating between the material world and the spiritual world, then it's always this is the material, that is the spiritual. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes that a sincere seeker of the essence of Vedanta knowledge, quote, must therefore be prepared to hear the Vedic literature like the Upanishads, Vedanta and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis for the benefit of its progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. It says be prepared. Whether you get the opportunities is another thing. But you have to be prepared. This idea, oh, we don't have to hear all this. That's not a good attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless. So you hear, but then you have to follow, right? So what does follow mean?
Applying.
So in the process, what do we call that?
Abhideya.
But in the Upanishadic?
Manan.
Okay? Because manana means you're applying it. That's the Abhideya. You hear it, you contemplate it, right? You apply it. Because Abhideya means it's being chit potency, means knowledge and activity. So the two go together.
Yes.
Right? Chit is full when there's both. Mm-hmm. If there's only one or the other, that's why you don't get the perfect result.
Yes.
Right? So then you have to follow it. So just to read, that's also. Because you say if you're just reading and not using it, what's the meaning?
Yes.
Yes.
Wouldn't we need vyasana in the application?
No, nididhyasana is when you realize. Then you're working from value. So then you could say is then that application is, you know, in its perfect form. Because now you value it, now you just naturally do it. Right? So then it's the difference between whether it's coming from jnana or it's coming from vijnana. Right? But it'll still be that abhideya, because the manana will turn into nididhyasana. Right? But without manana, generally it tends to not get there so much. Right? Yes?
It seems that for this stage of glorification, there must first be some contemplation.
Yes.
And for the stage of meditation, there should be some realization, so that, as described, hear about, glorify, and meditate upon seems to correspond to Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana to some degree.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you value it, then you think about it. You think about what you value. Yeah, because it's connected with your identity. You value it because it's connected with your identity. Because that's then what you do. What you do creates the samskaras, which is how you'll view the world. Yeah, so it all connects. It works quite well together. Srila Prabhupada stated the same point even more simply, indeed, with a brevity of a sutra in Bombay on 19 September 1973. Jigyasaya means Vedanta Vakya Vicharena. Vedanta, jigyasa, inquisitiveness. To be inquisitive into the essential meaning of Shastra means to take an active interest in Vedanta philosophy. Hence, Vedanta Vakya Vicharena. Vedanta is a bona fide way of Brahma Jigyasya, inquiring to the one absolute truth imparted by scripture. That is originally given by Vedanta Krit, Sri Krishna himself, and taught by great acharyas in disciplic succession. Right? So, one is that the Vedanta philosophy itself. Now, point is there, then we say, well, we don't worry about Vedanta, we worry about Bhagavatam. But what is Bhagavatam? It is the natural commentary of Vedanta. So, ultimately, when we say you should study Vedanta Sutra, we mean Bhagavatam. Because even you want to study Vedanta Sutra, nice. But what about the commentary? Right? Just like we study, if we printed Prabhupada's Gita, but it was only the shlokas,
yes,
and no commentary, it wouldn't be really, you know, what we consider complete study. So even that's there, you have to study the main. Does that make sense? So a specific study of Vedanta is only a supplement to Bhagavatam study. But this Bhagavatam can stand on its own. Like that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if we study just Vedanta, we won't get the full understanding. Because Vyasadeva had already written Vedanta Sutra before he wrote Bhagavatam. And so if it had completed itself, then he would have been satisfied. But he wasn't. Because it wasn't direct. He defeats all the other philosophies. He establishes it, but still one can make a mistake. Therefore, you know, Shankara is Shriraka Bhasya. Right? That's a misunderstanding of what he presented. Okay. What does the developed mind achieve by bona fide inquisitiveness? That's a nice term, the developed mind, right? Or improved mind. Sometimes they use that. So the common person, the unimproved mind, he's not interested in developing it. So it's a very nice. So what does the developed mind achieve by bona fide inquisitiveness? Nishreyasya, quote, the highest benediction the Shastra has to offer, end quote, 2.3.11. The benediction that Brahma, obtained after studying the Vedas thrice. Bhagavat yachalo bhavo is steadfast, spontaneous attraction to Bhagavan Shri Krishna. Footnote 3. The great sage Vedavyas composed the Vedanta Sutra and its natural commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam, to shed light upon the underlying logic of the entire corpus of Vedic literatures. That logic distinguishes the supreme goal of life, called Paramartha, from the mundane goals of civilized society. And he's talking about the mundane goals of civilized society, let alone uncivilized society. Right? Because he's, you know, in other words, you're studying the Vedic literature, but Vedanta and Bhagavatam show you actually what's the purpose of it. So who's studying the Vedic literature? Those who follow the Veda. So those who don't study the Veda don't connect their life in this way to the Veda, then that is going to be uncivilized life. Right? The mundane goals are numbered as 4: dharma, occupational duties; artha, economic development; kama, the satisfaction of worldly desires; and moksha, salvation from papa karma, sins committed while performing daily duties, while making money, and while satisfying the senses. Unfortunately, the greater part of society is more interested in the 4 lesser goals than in the paramartha. And even that, they're more interested in just dharma, artha, kama, and basically just in artha and kama.
Yeah.
Right. That's all. Yeah. And specifically just kama. Kama. Somebody's getting artha because everybody's interested in kama. Right? Right? You know, that's the whole trick.
Just exploiting everybody else's kama. And then
Because if you just do kama, you're only spending.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to have artha to make, but the point is because you can get others to spend, you make. That's how it works.
You're worth it.
Yeah. You are worth it. Therefore, Vedanta Sutra Srimad Bhagavatam teaches that dharma, artha, kama, and moksha had a source. Right. That's the important thing. Because we're always looking, have a tendency to look, that there's dharma, okay, that's here. Then there's this alternative. Mm. No. This only has a position because there's the source. Because there's bhakti. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha are only the elements of bhakti that are disengaged from the Lord. So if you take the facilities and activities and the endeavor for enjoyment of bhakti, but direct that towards oneself, that's dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. But when it's done to please Krishna, then it's just called devotional service.
It's like the other philosophies that you just take them out.
And
try to make them live on their own.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like trying to make a whole philosophy and a thing out of a carburetor or something,
exactly,
you know,
like that.
No, it's part of something a little bit bigger, you know. You know, carburetors, mufflers.
Mufflers.
That's
the thing.
Mufflers, you know. Yeah. You know, it's just like, you know, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Indeed, the paramartha and the provider of worldly necessities are shown to be one and the same. Purushartha ata shabdatiti badarayana. Sage Badarayana, the author of these sutras, declares the true goal of human life to be the supreme person. Vedanta Sutra 341. Because in the third, then he gets into prayojana. Right? That makes sense. So it's set up like a. Now, were we? This came from the last page. That did we finish? Yeah, okay. We're on the top of 5. Short. Yes.
The last sentence. The goal of human life is to be the supreme person.
Indeed.
It's page 5. Right?
Page 5.
On the bottom.
The goal of human life to be the supreme person. Yeah, the goal means the human life. In other words, the goals in material society are dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. That's the goals. But the real goal is the paramartha, is the supreme person.
Yes.
Right? So Lord Chaitanya says, prema pumarto mahan. That's the actual purushartha.
Yes.
Right? So that's the real gain, is the supreme person. So he's just put it in sutra form that the true goal of human life is not dharma, artha, karma, moksha, but it's the supreme person. In other words, it's bhakti.
Yes.
Right? So it's just that others then would take, okay, the supreme element, leave out the person, you know, just say it's being poetics, you know, they have their means. Or this is a verse that Shankara didn't comment on. Right? He just comments on the one that's, you know, makes it easy, and then these he leaves. So naturally, an intelligent student of Shankara would have doubts.
Yes.
And then the only one that can answer these doubts realistically are the Vaishnavas. So then they will take up Vaishnavism when it comes along. Right? Because he was a few hundred years, I think, before Ramanuja, mm-hmm. when he came. Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. Mud was 700, Ramanuja was about 12.
Yeah. Shankara was
5th century. Okay, so a few hundred years before. 5th or 4th century, so that puts... Now, the only thing, 700 means 700 years ago. Yes, so that means that Madhva.
Yeah.
Then 11th or 10th century. And Ramanuja would have been?
Later.
12.
Ramanuja was 12. Okay. And then Madhva was... Okay. Okay, where were we? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was just expecting that it will to look like this to serve the Supreme Person.
No. Well, he's saying the goal of him, like, to, he's saying not that you are going to be the Supreme Person. Mm-hmm. It means that the he's declaring that the Supreme Person is the ultimate goal.
Yes.
That's the whole point of Vedanta Sutra. That's because it's so concise, it doesn't come out like that. So that's why we see when Jiva Goswami writes in sutras, he writes them a little bit bigger so they're more clear. Because otherwise, he says this is going to be a problem. Right? Because in your mind, it says exactly those who follow your teachings understand it exactly. It's very concise, comfortable, but others will miss it. So when you say the true goal of whom you like to be the Supreme Person, that means attaining that Supreme Person. So we know that attainment means serving.
Yes.
That's why then it was discussed before about that. Yes. So that's why the Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on this. Because what does it mean to obtain that person? Because
yes.
the yogis will say merge into him, the other will say yes, because that Supreme Person is coming from, what was it? He's the mode of goodness of ignorance, which is coming from ajnana, which is who knows where it's coming from. They're not even going to discuss that one. You know, and then that is going to be this side. So they kind of finesse the person part. Mm-hmm. You know, is that, in other words, you meditate on him and then he evaporates into this Brahman. But that's not what it says here. Mm-hmm. So they're using these indirect interpretations. But that's what they'll do with it. Because the direct, it's obvious, it means the person. Yes. But now, what does that mean, obtaining the person?
Yes.
Right? Yes. So then, that's what Bhagavatam will point out.
Yes.
Okay. Shonaka Rishi and the other sages in Naimisharanya find themselves greatly inspired by Sutta Goswami's rendition of the learned poetic teachings of Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikit. The sages voice their eagerness to learn from Sudha Goswami about other questions King Parikit put before his spiritual master and how they were answered. Right? Because, in other words, he's presenting the teachings, but he's presenting it according to how they're asking the questions. Right? So, in other words, the teachings between Sukadev Goswami and Parikit Maharaj are so special, but then we, you know, to understand them, then here we have the questions and answers between two great sages discussing that conversation.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then that becomes even better. They bring out things that we wouldn't catch.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Because if Shonaka, you know, coming in the line of, isn't he coming in Bhrigu's line? Is he in Bhrigu or Brihaspati? Or he's in one of these?
He's in Bhrigu, yeah.
Bhrigu line, yeah. So he's Bhrigu line is considered the best of the Brahminical lines. It's kind of in its own class, then there's all the other Brahminical lines. So it's kind of like you have within the other Brahminical lines, you have these like four levels. Then there's the Bhrigu line. It's just in its own class. So he's coming in that. So special. But he's getting bewildered. And he's the leader of all these others. He's studied in all these things. And so he's wanting to bring out these points. So that will be very relevant for us. So that's why for us, the study of Bhagavatam as being discussed in this conversation is even more important than as it was directly discussed between Sukadev and Parikshit.
Yes.
Right? Because we'll get more from it. That's the advantage of the Purana.
Yes.
Right? Otherwise, Vedanta Sutra would have already done everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The sages dismiss those who never hear and chant such topics of having ear holes like the ground holes in which venomous snakes make their dens. When the tongues vibrate, the froggish croaking of worldly babble, the snakes crawl from these holes and, following the nonsense sounds of their source, kill the frogs and eat them. In his purport to verse 24, Srila Prabhupada again writes of the solemn purpose of chapter 3, comparing it to the first two chapters of the second canto. We should note with profit that in the first three chapters of the second canto, a gradual process of development of devotional service is being presented. In the first chapter, the first step in devotional service for God consciousness by the process of hearing and chanting has been stressed, and a gross conception of the personality of God in his universal form for the beginners is recommended. Right, so means that's the support. The main process is hearing and chanting, and the supportive process of the universal form is given. Because we're so accustomed to dealing with the material energy, that here is ways that those aspects of our life that we're still, you know, quite distracted by, then we can make a connection. So we purify it.
Yes.
Right? By such a gross conception of God through the material manifestations of his energy, one is enabled to spiritualize the mind and senses and gradually concentrate the mind upon Lord Vishnu, the Supreme, who is present at the Supersoul in every heart and everywhere, in every atom of the material universe. So we're looking at it from pure devotion as not that it's gross, but we're looking at it from the material concept. This is like in a spiritual category, intellectual category, that basically no one on the planet can relate to. No religions, no philosophies can comprehend it. And that's what we call just beginners. Right? That's the thing. That's why you can't approach Bhagavatam relying on one's previous conditioning as qualification. Because there is no qualification in the material world that will prepare one for what Bhagavatam will say. It's purely because we're the spirit soul and having that faith and interest that we can understand it. Yes. It's not because I'm so intelligent I should understand this, or I know Sanskrit I should understand this, or you know all these different things. No, it's not going to happen. It's because you sincerely desire and make the endeavor as approved by the acharyas, Krishna reveals himself. Because this is stuff where, when he's talking about that this is just basic gross, we're thinking, yeah, this is gross. It says, yeah, but the point is you have to look straight up to look at that gross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like from our position as tribals, you want to look at, you know, Shudra in the Vedic context, you have to look up.
Yeah. 50 feet of dirt and then there's
Shudra. Yeah, yeah, and then there's a Shudra, yeah.
Yeah, I see one.
Got my binoculars, yeah. Okay. Right, so we see here that whole thing where Prabhupada's putting. So by such a gross conception of God through the material manifestations of his energy, one is enabled to spiritualize the mind and senses. And gradually, so you're spiritualizing the mind and senses. That's what you're doing, because the mind is distracted. The senses are distracted by these material facilities and endeavors, right? Results, experiences. So they're spiritualized by concentrating upon the Lord, Lord Vishnu, the Supreme, who is present as the super soul in everyone's heart. So he's the one controlling it, and everywhere, in every atom of the material universe. So that means everything. So the point is, if you're seeing that here's Krishna consciousness, then there's something separate from that in my life, that's the point where the universal form's important. Because there is no such thing. Otherwise, why mention in every atom? That means that what you say can't be connected. Krishna's already there. You say it can't be connected, but it's already him. Right?
Yeah.
You know, and one may say, but how can this be God? It says, well, how can you be looking there? Why are you looking there? Why do you see that? Yeah. Right? What a 3-year-old, if he walks into, you know, let's say, you know, they're getting ready for some kind of a program or something, you know, let's say a wedding or that, and all the ladies are in the one room, they're getting dressed and, you know, doing this and that, and the 3-year-old walks into the room, what does he see? He just sees a bunch of people that are most likely going to give him the most attention. Right? That's all he sees. Right? What happens if one of the what happens if the best man walks into the room? What does he see? Yeah, opportunity. Right? Bridesmaids, hey, you know, like that. You know, you understand? So that's the whole point. Is why are you seeing it? You say, oh, this is that. It can't be connected to God. Well, why are you seeing it?
That's value.
Because it has value to you. Otherwise, you wouldn't see it. You don't see things that you don't value. You just don't see them. Right, so either in the positive or the negative, you see, that's what you see. You don't see something else, right? And so, and then because you want to see it, that's why God's manifested. If you didn't want to see it, He doesn't manifest it. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, it's just like basically is like Draupadi means. You have 2 times in her life where she is in a situation where you have uncultured men dealing with her badly. Actually, 3 times. You know, but they're very short. The one at the gambling match. You know, it's not that it lasted a long time, right? One with Kichika. You know, that was only an offer. I didn't even get past that. And then you have Jayadratha. He actually kidnapped her. Right? But, you know, not a lot can happen when you're on a chariot trying to get away from the Pandavas. You know, you have to focus more on getting away. But the point is that, you know, it's very minimal. But in generally in Kali Yuga, it's a lot, you know, it's the volume is greater.
Mm. Like that.
You know, so it's just, it's just unfortunate. Therefore, Manda Sumanda Matayo, right? Yeah. Okay. The system of Pancha Upasana, recommending 5 mental attitudes for the common man, is also enacted for this purpose, namely, gradual development, worship of the superior that may be in the form of fire, electricity, the sun, the mass of living beings, Lord Shiva, and at last the impersonal Supersoul, the partial representation of Lord Vishnu. They are all nicely described in the 2nd chapter, but in the 3rd chapter, further development is prescribed after one has actually reached the stage of Vishnu worship. Right? In other words, we're starting going back here, going through the Panchupasana. Once you get to Vishnu in the Panchupasana, then further development is discussed. Because you're starting with Vishnu, meaning the partial representation of Vishnu. You're only at the aspect of mode of goodness, that the Lord is simply is pure goodness, but you don't quite understand what that means. There's no such technical thing as pure goodness and form for the impersonalist.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It means you have pure goodness, which is no form, and then you have form. But of forms, there must be gradation, so there must be a form that's just on the edge of pure goodness. So they'll attribute that to Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
So he's that and more.
Yes.
Right? So that's why it's only a partial representation. It doesn't really represent the Lord. But it's above everybody else. So
yes.
That he's above everybody else, that's the part that's useful.
Yes.
But that he's not quite on the eternal transcendental platform, that's where it breaks down. That's why we call them, you know, we call them impersonalists.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, upasampradaya, all these different things. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Does that make sense? Because that Apasampradaya, you have that wide range of caste Goswamis. Now, that's 2 groups. One, what we would call within our Gaudiya line, the caste Goswamis. You know, Nityananda Vamsas, this, that. So, within that, there may be persons who, born in that line, are actual proper practicing devotees. Just they happen to be born in that family. It's like you got to be born somewhere. So, you know, that's where they end up. Right? So, that's fine. Then there's those who are misapplying that for their own purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have those born in these Brahmin families that are impersonalists. You know, either from karma or jnana. But they're strict followers of the Veda. So that wine, but they're worshipping Vishnu. That's so they're doing all the rituals that the caste Goswamis are doing, or the pure Vaishnavas are doing. They're all the same. Right? They ring bells, they wave incense, you know, they make offerings, they put tulsi, it's all happening. But you have these categories that misapplied within the Gaudi and or within Vaishnav lines or misapplied outside. So therefore the caste Goswami is a broad category, because otherwise we'll say, oh, the Hindus, they're worshipping Vishnu. But the one has to check, what does that mean, they're worshipping Vishnu? What's Vishnu's position? Right? So that's why it says partial. Right? But the Panchapashana is supposed to culminate in, that's why then in Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma describes it in connection with the Lord. So we'll get into that in detail when we, you know, after the festival, because that will come up. Yes?
So those three chapters, they describe three processes, universal form, Panchapashana, and devotional service?
They're basically describing how devotional service is it says here, gradual process of developed. That's what's being. So in the first, it's showing that you have to start with hearing and chanting, but the universal form and aspect is there. Then you're talking about the yoga system, how one can bring it to Vishnu, but you can either take the direct or indirect path within that. And then this will be talking more about the direct devotional service again, but about the upasana kanda, about the worship and those kind of things. That wasn't covered before about the karma and jnana. The karma and jnana yoga were done nicely, but now there's upasana with the demigods. That aspect of karma and jnana. Yeah. Is that? Yeah. They are all nicely described in the second chapter, but in the third chapter, further development is prescribed after one has actually reached the stage of Vishnu worship, or pure devotional service, and the mature stage of Vishnu worship is suggested herein in relation to the change of heart. Shloka Nisharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 12, everyone should worship Krishna. Verses 13 to 15, 25, Shonaka Rishi's eagerness to hear Krishna Katha. Verses 1 to 12, everyone should worship Krishna. Human beings are urgently called to take up bhakti yoga with great force, to vrena, no matter if they are karmis, akamis, or mokshakamis. Shri Sukadev Goswami states that he has now answered Parikit Maharaj's question as to the duty of one on the threshold of death. A thoughtful man should hear Krishna Katha, but as Srila Prabhupada points out, quote, not all human beings are intelligent, so the importance of human life is not always understood, end quote. In other words, what if one has other desires? Should one worship and fix his mind only on Krishna for spiritual attainments? And for achieving material benefits, should one worship demigods? As a prelude to answering this question, Sukadeva Goswami begins by mentioning the Vedic directions that are to be followed by conditioned souls entertaining so many material desires. Right? Well, yes.
Just on the previous, karmis, jnanis, and yogis, karmis, akarmis, and also.
Means you have desires, you don't have desires, you know, and you want moksha.
Okay.
So basically you could say it's whether you're, you know, sakam, nishkam, like that. Because you can do it because it's just good, or it's right, or it's the thing to do, or... Because within the material, everybody's got desires, but you would call a class desireless because they don't desire just the regular, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, you know, like that. So they're kind of in their own class, you know, they're saintly, you know. Like I remember one musician was talking about, one top musician was talking about another, you know, top musician. I think before, he may have been like in a previous generation. And he said he was a sadhu. And the reason why is because when he sang, he just sat and didn't move his arms or anything. He just sat and you know, just closed his eyes and just sang. You know, so none of this, you know, slapping the leg and this and that and doing all these things and like that. So they just go, wow, this guy's a sadhu because he's just singing, you know, because we sing and, you know, it's all the thing and You know, it's like you notice the guy's doing going like this, you know, and holding it, and keeps holding it, and then finally when everyone classes, immediately he moves out of it. He does not a nanosecond longer. Like that, because he was just doing it to get that reaction from the crowd. So they said, this guy didn't do that, so he was a saint.
Yeah.
You know? Like that. So that's the, that'll be the, you know. So however you see him, you know, it's still... In other words, what if one has other desires, right, in the devotional process? Right? Should one worship and fix his mind only on Krishna for spiritual attainment? And for achieving material benefits, should one worship demigods? Because that's the thing. I shouldn't approach Krishna. That's bad. That's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is bad and it's wrong, but who else are you going to approach? You know? You know, it's just like, is it good to go to a bank and ask for money?
No.
No, because they're going to, you know, it's not, there's a price. You know, they're going to take the 20%, right? You know, but the point, the problem is, but it's, but that's, there's no other option.
Go to the docks. That's not better. Go to the docks. I mean, loan sharks.
Sure. Oh yeah, that's even worse.
That's not, yeah, not an option.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's that's really not. Yeah.
We see in ISKCON is a phenomena that Srila Prabhupada introduced pure devotional service in the beginning, and then when the culture was introduced, then all this demigod worship, astrology, and this and that,
yes.
Then it came, and now it's like really big.
Yeah.
So, where is this, what's the impurity? Is it polluted consciousness or the people?
Well, I mean, you have two aspects. Using it is not polluted consciousness, because pure devotees use these things, because these are just part of the social scene. It's part of how Krishna wants it to go. It's just like, let us say, devotees are supposed to hear and chant, take prasad, associate with one another. So there's a variety of ways to do that. You have the sadhana that's there in the pancharatrik system, so everyone comes together. But you also have all the samskaras and that in the Vedic system. It's for exactly the same purpose. The reason the samskar, one, you benefit the particular individuals, but at the same time, it's all about sadhu-sangha. So the same purpose is being obtained. So, therefore, the lifestyle of those who are the pure devotees and those who are... it still follows the Vedic system. It's a natural, the spiritual world. That's where varnashrams come from. All the varnashram is simply documenting the lifestyle that goes on there. But as we said, if you take something out and try to make it complete, you try to make a whole vehicle out of a carburetor, you know, like that, then it comes out a little funny. You know, I mean, stick some little, you know, how you say, take the carburetor, stick it on the skateboard, sit on top, you know, like that, go vroom vroom, like this, you know, then, you know, something's happening. But it's not complete. So the point is these elements are also the same. So Varnashram has elements that are added because people don't want to accept the supremacy of the Lord and devotional service. So these are ways, these are side distractions. So we just clear all those off and just deal with the devotional activities. So it has no... Radharani is worshipping the sun god. Now, how is that allowed to happen? Why would one be worshipping the sun god? Right? Means you worship demigods, there's some material benefit. Okay, so is Radharani interested in material benefit? No. Is Jatila?
Yes.
Okay. Now, will Jatila agree that Radharani goes and worships the sun god?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when you go to the temple to worship the sun god, either Jatila stayed at home, and then you can meet Krishna, right? Or, when you get there, then, as a general populace, you don't do the puja. You need a Brahmin.
Yes.
Otherwise, where does this point of a Brahmin come? So who's going to be the Brahmin?
Krishna.
You understand? And then we're complaining about why all this exclusive. No, this is all part of just rasa. This is how it works. You know? The Pandavas are walking along. They're pure devotees. They're kshatriyas. They can take care of themselves. but they're attacked by the Gandharva king. And they said, why do you attack us? We're doing nothing wrong. He says you're walking without, you claim to be Kshatriyas, but where's your Brahman? There's no, Kshatriyas have to follow Brahmins. Where's your Brahman? So therefore you're irreligious, and you're irreligious in front of my wife, and I'm not going to let that happen. You know, because that's the rule. You don't allow irreligiosity to happen in front of your women. It just doesn't happen. You know, the men are sitting around, you know, you do something stupid, okay, but you don't do it in front of women. You know, so therefore he comes out and fights. You know, so that's the thing, is that they just follow. It's part of the culture. It's how everything works. And so, therefore, the devotees, that's just how they live. But we're so used to that I do something because I get a benefit. And then we just say, no, but the Western culture, that's just the natural way to live. But it's purely based on sense gratification, you know, and artha. You know, it's at best artha and kama. You know, we're talking on a good day, because generally there's not necessarily a lot of artha, and the quality of their kama is not very good either. You know, what to do?
Yeah.
Like that. So, therefore, it's just part of the scene, so the devotees would just naturally follow it. So, that's the thing, is when it's introduced, it's meant to follow in the footsteps of pure devotional service. Yes. But, as we saw in the chapter, that some of the yogis get distracted by the facilities offered, the benefits of that aspect of the yoga system. And that is getting, you know, distracted by the astrology, by the Ayurveda, by the... But at least that's better than getting distracted by New Age. And better than getting distracted by just eating, sleeping, mating, defending, you know, based on non-Shastra. Does that make sense? So it is a step up, but it's not that much of a step up, you know? Not compared to the Bhagavatam, but it's talking about it. So when these are introduced, that's why you have to know what's the essence. You know, so in the future, it's not now, that's what the Chaitanya Upanayana course is about. How to see the aparavidya in connection with paravidya, so that you don't become distracted. That's what the whole course is about. But it's actually a more difficult course to develop, because one has to know this technical philosophy. And with that, then look at these material sciences. Because if you don't know this and look at the material sciences, there's every chance that one will get distracted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. You understand? Okay. In other words, what if one has other desires? Should one worship and fix his mind only on Krishna for spiritual attainments and for achieving material benefits? Should one worship demigods? Because that's the general thing. So we worship Krishna, but I have to be practical. So they don't even bother the demigods. They just, you know, deal with, you know, I don't know, the forest, you know, how you say, what do you call them?
The universe.
Huh?
The universe.
The universe of the forest. What is it? Fairies. I can't remember. I mean, it's one of these, you know, Stonehenge-y terms. You know? No? Yeah. But it's all we deal is just the material energy as it is. So we just let the modes of nature worship. We just worship the modes. And that we don't even know we're doing it. That's the fun part, you know. The scientific society is so much in ignorance that they don't even know what they're doing.
Yes.
You know? But they have the attitude as if, you know, their father owns the universe or something. it's bad.
He kind of does, but they just don't know
who
he is.
The father, yeah. The wrong father, yeah. Godfather, yes. And for achieving material, okay. As a prelude to answering this question, Sukadeva Goswami begins by mentioning the Vedic directions that are to be followed by conditioned souls entertaining so many material desires.
Right.
Because we're talking here is it can mean the materialist coming into seeing the light on why they should be Krishna conscious, or it can mean devotees who are practicing Krishna consciousness who are distracted by so many material desires. Right? It deals with both. Because it's a seamless system. That's the thing. We make it into there's this, then there's this, then there's that. It's one system. It just naturally flows. That's the difference. A mode of goodness means you're seeing it all together. Mode of passion means you compartmentalize it.
Yes.
Right? So being from passion, we love to compartmentalize. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Or, as Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, this section can be said to be supplied as an explanation of who should be worshipped. Right? Mm-hmm. By first showing the deities from whom the foolish worship. Mm-hmm. One desiring to become absorbed in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti should worship Lord Brahma or Brihaspati. One desiring powerful sex should worship Indra. One who desires good progeny should worship the great progenitors called the Prajapatis. One who desires good fortune should worship Durga Devi, the superintendent of the material world. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire, because energy comes, the energy in the body comes from fire. And one who aspires only after money should worship the Vasus. One should worship the Rudra incarnations of Lord Shiva if he wants to be a great hero. One who wants a large stock of grain should worship Aditi. One who desires to attain the heavenly planet should worship the sons of Aditi. One who desires a worldly kingdom should worship Vishvadeva. And one who wants to be popular with the general mass of population should worship the Sadhya demigod. Because the Sadhya is the head of each group. Like Kuvera is the Sadhya of the Yakshas. Like that. One who desires a long span of life should worship the demigods known as the Ashvini Kumaras, because they're the doctors of the demigods. And a person desiring a strongly built body should worship the earth. Right? You don't get more solid than that. Nothing she can't hold up, right? Or knock down, one or the other. Right? One who desires stability in his post should worship the horizon, right? The horizon doesn't move. The sky moves, horizon doesn't. Right? The horizon and earth combined, not horizon and sky, horizon and earth, because that's fixed. Right? Yeah. One who desires to be beautiful should worship the beautiful residents of the Gandharva planet. Right? Because they're considered who's beautiful. Right, the Gandharvas, right? So the women are the Apsaras, right? And the men, they look good. It's like it mentioned about when Arjuna, after he threw his Agni Astra at what was his name, Chitrarata. Then when he fell out, of his airplane and fell onto the ground, then he grabbed it by the hair and dragged him to Yudhishthira. It mentioned about his hair was done up nicely and it had pearls and it was looking good. They go for it, the Gandharvas. Right? It's like when you have a whole collection of the Hollywood celebrities get together, the models and all these things. Like, they really do it up, right? Way beyond everybody else, but no one minds because they're Gandharvas. That's what they do, right? And one who desires a good wife should worship the Apsaras and the Urvasi society girls of the heavenly kingdom. For a good wife. Yeah. What a bad wife? Then that's another thing. That means it's. See, your top means like of the five most chaste women in the universe, right, in the history. So we're talking here, 150 billion, trillion years, and we're and it'll be good for the rest of the like that. One of them is a prostitute, but we're talking about this level of prostitute with the Apsaras and Nadara. It's that whoever they're with, they're totally chaste to that person. It's not that they're with this guy and looking at that guy, trying to get that guy over. They're not trying to work out business, while they're, understand? So they're focused. They know what to do. They know how to behave. They know how to interact. They do all those things. It's just that, tonight it may be with one person, and, after a few weeks it's with someone else. That's the weakness. But otherwise, it's like Menaka, not Menaka. Rumba. You know Rumba? You heard Rumba? She's one of the top five apsaras. But she's married to I think Manigriva. Nanda Kuvara and Manigriva.
Mm-hmm.
But she's still a society girl, so Indra sends her to, you know, distract some sage and stuff. It's just the job.
Manigriva doesn't
mind.
Huh?
Manigriva
doesn't
mind. He's a tree. Trees don't seem to care, right? What do you want? Who's your husband? See that tree over there?
I'm married to a tree.
Long story. You know, so these are talking about the top ones, you know, like that. But these aren't the regular, you know, light a cigarette, you know, girls, you know, like that kind of thing. One who desires domination over others should worship Lord Brahma, the head of the universe. One who desires tangible fame should worship the personality of Godhead. Right? Tangible fame, right? There's fame and there's tangible fame. Right? Then, you know, there's 15 minutes and then there's something tangible. Right? And one who desires a good bank balance should worship the demigod Varuna. Because right? All the demons take shelter of Varuna. And all the demons got money.
Interesting. Kuvera is a treasure.
Yeah, but Varuna's... Because there's okay, do it this way. If you have a good bank balance, are you worried? It means you have it, you know, money in your. Are you worried about liquidity?
Yeah.
You caught it? You should or not?
I don't understand liquidity.
Liquidity.
Oh, liquidity.
Means that you can, if you want it, you can access it.
Yeah.
Okay, so therefore, Varuna, he deals with liquids here. So. Gee, that's a better thing. You know, Kuvera just sits there, right, you know. You know, because he only deals for everybody else. That's the thing, and the Shastras will describe all, the different Puranas will give the reasons why all these personalities are the leading in these areas. Like that. So then some of them will come out.
A lot of wealth and gems come from the ocean.
Yeah, that's also the point. So that is, you know, it's just, before it was just, if people are pious, it just washes up on the beach. So it's not like a, now people go and hang out at the beach, so there's nothing there. But previously, no one hung out at the beach. You know, what do you do on the beach? It's always interesting. You go to, I don't know about now, but before, you go down to Madras, like in the 70s. They had one of the best beaches, you know, that you see anywhere. Huge, long, but nobody's there because it's like South Indians. They can't swim. What would you do at the beach? You know, you just don't find anyone there. If one desires to be a greatly learned man, he should worship Lord Shiva. And if one desires a good marital relation, he should worship the chaste goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. Yeah, so it mentioned about the Urvasi, it said good wife. It didn't necessarily mean about a great marital relationship. If you want a trophy wife, then these ones. If you want a good relationship, then this other one. 1-7. Srila Prabhupada comment. Oh, it's past the time. Okay. Aspirations for material enjoyment by endeavoring persons are condemned. Such aspirations for something like the intoxication of the degraded human society. Intelligent persons should try to avoid these aspirations and seek instead the permanent life by returning home back to Godhead. So we'll end here. Continue tomorrow, right? Today's Monday. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaur ki.